Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. I'm so excited to ask you this question. Did you see Wonder Woman this
weekend? I did.
What did you think?
It was okay.
What? Dagger to the heart.
Really?
I loved it. It was so bitchin'.
It was okay.
Dude, it's been the best DC movie.
Well, that since doesn't say much.
But wait.
That says
since
nothing.
First Tim Burton Batman.
That says nothing.
No, that's first Tim Burton Batman's awesome.
But it's been a long time. But to say, like, Wonder Woman is the best DC movie that's been out lately.
I totally get that. But they've had a lot of money to throw out a lot of movies that should have been slam dunks with great directors, with great cast.
I would disagree with the great directors.
Tim Burton's a pretty great director.
I'm talking about from when they've started this new DC line. The Tim Burton stuff is 25 years ago. 30
but
years
it still
ago.
Counts. I mean, it's been that long since
but it's
really
not part of the DC expanded universe.
But even Wonder Woman's cameo in the other movie was kind of cheesy.
I thought her cameo in Batman vs. Superman was the best part of Batman vs. Superman.
Yes. But, I mean, it was still, kind of random how she just shows up. So I was like, it's cool. If it was any other character, I'd probably be like,
I thought it was a good movie. There's parts of it I really liked. There's parts of it I didn't like.
Really? I thought you'd be so stoked on that movie. It broke records. Well, you think it's just because it's a girl comic book?
I'm glad comic book nerds. Look, that character's been around.
Wait to see super boobies.
That character's been around for 70 plus years, and it should have had a movie way before now.
Right.
Because it's such an iconic character.
You think it was just because it was probably a hard
Well, it's cast. Only been really the last 15 years that superhero movies have started to be really big, and I don't think a studio wanted to put a lot of money behind a female superhero because it's mostly fanboys that like superheroes, you know, and I didn't think they thought that they could get enough, you know, boys and bring girls in to watch it. But it happened. I'm glad it happened. And there was scenes of that movie that are really kick ass, like that part in the middle where she goes to no man's land.
Yes,
super
yes.
kick ass.
So
one
badass.
Of the best sequences in any superhero movie.
Yep.
But I thought the ending was.
We won't talk about the ending because not everybody.
Thought the ending was a little. That wasn't. There was. But I honestly think though.
I loved it.
If you just made that a male superhero in that movie, people like, well, it's okay. I think
I think it's because
it was a female superhero. People are like, oh, this is great. But that's great, though, because it broke that glass ceiling of now there's a female superhero.
I feel
if
it was another DC comic, people would be raving about it, too. But
only because the bar is so low for DC movies.
Yeah, true. But, dude, I was expecting it to suck.
I wasn't.
I thought it would be good. And it ended up being awesome. I was like, this is so good.
I was expecting it to be what I thought it was. An okay to good superhero movie.
I thought it was great.
I didn't think it was great.
My brother, on a scale of 1 to 10, gave it an 8. I gave it a 9. I was story was great. Cast was great. I mean, the dialogue. Dude, the biggest thing to flop in comic book movies is the dialogue. And the dialogue was awesome. I was like, dude, this is well written. I was like, I think a third into it, I was like, this is going to be badass. It was humorous.
I don't want to give anything away, but I had issues with some starts of it, but, you know. I'm glad it's out there, and I'm glad Wonder Woman now has her own movie because that character deserved one.
Right.
But I just don't think it's the greatest superhero movie ever made.
Do you think she's a better Wonder Woman than
Linda Carter? Hell no.
Linda Carter is
the best Wonder Woman ever.
The best Wonder Woman ever.
Yeah. And, Michael Keaton's the best Batman.
I was expecting Linda Carter to do a cameo. They didn't do any cheeseball move. They could have done a lot of cheeseball moves.
DC doesn't do anything cheesy.
They could have done the invisible plane. They didn't do the invisible plane.
Well, how do you know? It could have been there.
That's true. Well played.
You know it wasn't there.
No, but I liked Chris Pine's character. I thought was awesome.
No, I thought it was a good movie. I enjoyed myself.
You were entertained?
Yeah, but I didn't walk out going, oh my fucking God, that was the greatest.
Well, Marvel always does great movies.
Yeah, Marvel's got a lot of hit and misses.
But DC has so many misses.
Marvel's created such a great universe that I can even go in and see one of their crappier movies and go, okay, well, that plugs into everything else, so I'm just enjoying the world they've created.
Right, that's how I am. I mean, I'm even like that with a bad DC.
And I don't like the world they've created in DC. I don't like Man of Steel. I didn't like. I don't like the dark, gloomy superheroes.
Yeah, I know. I can see that. But I just...
And Wonder Woman didn't play into that too much.
No. It was great. I loved it.
But
I liked the backstory, too. I didn't know her backstory at all. You probably did, because you're a comic book nerd. You're one of those guys like, I can't wait
Thought a lot of the action stuff was amazing. I thought the whole, like, that No Man's Land scene is amazing.
Yeah, I was impressed with the story, the demigods, all that stuff. That was awesome. I mean, it was just like, I was like, man, you know what? About time they wrote something great. They wrote something great.
I don't think it's great. Good. Mm. Not great.
I think it's great. It broke records.
You know why it broke records? Do you understand why it broke records? Because it's the first female lead superhero film.
It broke records.
For that reason.
Well, but you know what?
It's a good movie.
It could have been so bad.
Like, I agree.
Like Batman versus Superman was terrible. One of the stupidest movies I've ever seen.
Terrible. And the best part of that movie was Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I agree. She's also great. She's a
great actress.
And
she is
a great
Wonder
fit
Woman.
For that
she looks
role.
Like Wonder
yeah,
Woman.
Yeah, she looks
she's a great
like
Wonder
her,
Woman.
And it was just her fight scenes were awesome. I mean, it was.
No. And I'm glad it's inspiring. I'm glad it's inspiring young girls to finally see strong female leads. I mean, you had Princess Leia in the 70s, but that was it until you had Ripley and Aliens in the
80s. Well, like Catwoman, like remember the Halle Berry movie? Have you seen that movie?
But that was stupid.
But that was so
bad. That's
not
a strong lead female
character. But I'm just saying, like, that movie could have been, like, when they were hyping it up, that movie could have been badass. You have an Oscar winner. You have somebody that's got, like, a dark character to it.
Yeah, but
they totally cheeseballed
it up. No one cares about Catwoman.
Well, I picked it
there. No, they care about Catman. They care about Catwoman in the world of Batman. And that's why I think a lot of studios were scared to, like, okay, do people really care about Wonder Woman outside of the Justice League? And then I think that's why it took so long for a Wonder Woman to get a movie. Because
but see, that's the
like,
thing. I didn't think that people would. I didn't think people, even the like biggest comic book nerds, I didn't think they'd be
the world was ready for it. Well, way past ready for it. I knew it was going to be. I knew people were going to lose their minds when it came out because I knew it was going to be good. Things I'd read about it, they're like, this is going to be a good movie. And I knew just being a good movie plus all the hype around it was just going to make people lose their minds.
But they could have cheeseballed it up so much with all the special effects, with the costumes.
The whole ending was cheesy special effects.
Well, but that's it. Well, you got to expect some of that.
But that's the part I didn't like.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't be like this, you know,
what?
Shawshank Redemption of because it's just it's not as fun.
No, you got
like Shawshank Redemption is one of
my
favorite
middle
movies,
fight scene.
But that's not a fun.
That
movie
middle
for
battle
to watch.
Fight scene was badass. Why not throw something like take that and crank it up to 10 and put that at the end? Instead of some guy, I don't want to give anything away. But
I think you're like the only person I've talked to that didn't love the movie. I think you know what
I gave.
I was like, I went in like, oh man, this is probably gonna suck.
I didn't think it was gonna suck. I knew it was gonna be the best DC movie so far.
But they've done so badly with all of the. I mean, so many back to back to back to back.
I knew it was gonna be. Because they Man of Steel was another crappy Superman origin film that no one wanted.
Yep.
And then Batman vs Superman was just like they were just trying to cram something together. Like, there's so many different elements of Batman vs Superman from like 15 different comic book storylines they jammed into one movie, and it's just like this is too much. Wonder Woman, that story had never been told.
Right.
Which helped it a lot.
TV show, but yes.
But the TV show didn't tell
TV show
the origin story of Wonder Woman.
That's true.
And it was like the perfect storm of things.
Do you know like her backstory? Like, do you know Wonder Woman's backstory? Like, was any of that accurate with the
comic
book?
Yeah, she was molded from clay, and you know.
So those are the things that I didn't know, and I liked that backstory, and I liked the way they presented it. Because dude, you can present that in such a cheeseball way. I mean. Those comic books.
There were some cheesy things in the beginning.
Yeah, but I mean, that comes with everything.
Don't train her, I forbid you. Okay, train her, but train her better than anybody. You can't leave. I forbid you to leave. Okay, you can leave.
You know, there's a part when they show that first island. We won't reveal too much. Where it's just
Paradise Island.
Yeah, Paradise Island. And you know, every guy's just like, I want to go there.
I want to go there. The place is scary.
No, but I was very
women
impressed.
Beat your ass.
I know, but I mean, there's something hot about just seeing a bunch of women just fighting each other and jousting. It was like, yeah. I just want to be the ref, you know, just go there and be the ref. Be the chubby ref, you know. My goals are low. Just get there, be a part of the islands, you know, just be there. I just want to be there.
They'd kill you immediately.
Yeah, they probably would. I mean, they didn't even, you know, we won't give too much away. But anyways, I like the special effects. I thought it was a good movie. I'm glad it broke records.
I thought you thought it was great.
I did. You just said it was great. Good. I thought it was great. Well, you're kind of like bringing me down. I'm like, I shouldn't.
I didn't mean to bring you down. It's a good, everyone should see it. It's a good movie.
It's fantastic.
It's well worth the money to go see it.
I'm
just not blown away by it.
Okay, in the last 5 years, what superhero movie has blown you away? Don't say Deadwood because I already know. Or Deadpool.
Well, Deadwood's not a superhero.
Deadpool.
The first Guardians of the Galaxy. I thought that was really fun.
That was great. But see, this one's up there for me like that.
It wasn't as fun for me.
Really? Maybe you just prefer a man in
tights. Zamora is like one of the leads in that group. She's a strong female lead.
All right. Anyways, it looks like our special guest has arrived. Guitarist, songwriter, producer Andrew Doolittle.
Hey, how you guys
say
doing?
Say hello. Oh, our studio audience loves you.
Thanks, man. Good to
how
see
are you, man?
I'm well, thank you. How you doing?
I love this cat. I mean, this guy, he doesn't even know. We haven't seen each other in probably about 10 years. I think the last time I saw him, I played a show with him. I don't know if you remember this.
Okay.
I had my wisdom teeth pulled 3 days before a gig, and it was
murder. Did
you
sing?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I called the club. I called the booker, and I was like, listen, dude, I got my
why'd you schedule it that way?
Well, I scheduled it months before. So I had like a recurring gig, all right? Do you remember this?
Was this Mozambique?
No, this was Crow's Nest in Santa Cruz.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where you like flew out. You like flew right after. That, I remember taking you to the airport.
Right, I remember, yeah, you drove me to SFO
right after that,
and I slept in the airport
SFO.
And
that's right.
That's insane.
See what happens in the early days? Eddie, these are the stories you look back on. Mm-hmm. But this guy stood by my side, and we played this show. I called the booker, and the booker was like, yeah, you got your wisdom tooth. No, man, just the fact that you're doing the gig is great. And then we get there, and we just did like an acoustic set. It was you, me, and Dan Boyes, the saxophonist at the time. And we played this gig. We played like a 3-hour set, totally fulfilled the fact that we had to do a gig. And then I got yelled at by the club manager for like 45 minutes.
Why?
Just because he was like, I can't believe you didn't bring the whole band. I was like, dude, I called ahead of time. I got my wisdom teeth pulled 3 days ago. I can barely stand up. I'm all jammed up on drugs. The fact that you're yelling at me is absolutely ridiculous, but this will be the last time we play here, and that'll be that, and that'll be that. And and I remember the whole way to San Francisco Airport, I was like, man, these damn club bookers. And you were super, and he was super positive. And I remember that moment. I was like, this cat has his shit together, plays the best guitar solos around, has his whole spiel like together. Most musicians half-ass 90% of their gigs. You never half-assed any one of my gigs, and you know my music is not easy to just jump into.
Well,
this guy had it all down, every guitar lick, every part, pleasure to play with. And then when I was getting yelled at, he was like, hey man, let's go. It's cool, man. So I have so much mad respect, and he's been doing amazing things. So I'm so happy.
So the question I have to ask about that.
Let's do it.
I don't know if you would remember this or not, but do you know if you happened to like drive all the way back to LA after you dropped me off at SFO that night, or did you like grab a hotel up there or something?
Oh my god!
Do you
have any idea? I think we drove all the way home.
Okay, so yeah, so
from Santa Cruz, it was like a 6-hour drive.
Yeah, well, and actually from SFO because you swung up to drop
me
at the airport, so then you would have like hit another 6 hours going back down.
Yes.
So maybe I was just thinking that you were going to have another 6 hours to like, you know.
Oh, I was steaming.
Vent over all.
I was so steaming,
yeah.
and like Dan drove back because I remember I was just like, I'm pissed. I'm looped up on drugs.
Did they short your money on the gig?
No, they paid me, but they were like, I've never been shorted on a gig except for maybe one. That I'm like, yo, give me my money. No, I'm good about that. But dude, man, that pissed me off so much. But Andrew, enough about my wisdom teeth being pulled. Andrew, you came from a gig, flew out to another gig, had every part of the music for a 3-hour set that he hadn't played. I think you played it maybe a month before.
Okay.
But he came in, no rehearsal, slayed the gig. Every part was legit. Filled in parts for me when I just didn't have the energy to like put on a performance. I never will forget that performance. I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
And just delivered. And that is the type of musician that he is. And he was like, I had him booked for months, and he sent me, he's like, oh, I don't know if you still have me booked. I'm like, of course I got you booked. We're doing this interview. Uh-huh. I'm so excited. So, yeah, man.
Nice.
Welcome.
Thank you. Well, and now I get to fill in a bit of backstory on you and kind of a bit of this, too. And I mentioned to you earlier, I brought some props.
Uh-oh. Are these charts?
I dug in and found my Nikhil Kurula.
Look at that.
Box of charts here. Dude. Let me drop that closer to the
mic
so people can
appreciate the habit. This is why I just love this cat, because people don't do this anymore. They don't put that much effort into doing the work, and he's always done the work.
Blackmail photos?
Yeah. Maybe it looks like it, right?
Well, it's just a manila envelope. I don't know what it is.
Well, show them their actual music notes.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's not bullshit.
All right.
And look.
That makes sense.
He's charted out every guitar line. I mean, the precision and detail. My music is not, I mean, it ain't like Tchaikovsky or like Chopin or anything, but my music is not the easiest just to come in and just play.
No, it's no joke for sure.
It's no joke. And he always came in and just slayed it every time. It's just like, you're such a badass.
Well, so the other side of that, though, now, too, and part of what this...
You're going to play it all tonight?
Yeah, right. No, most definitely not. But, no, so I remember the first time I was getting into your music, we met, I believe, through Adam Gus.
That's right.
Because Adam was a good friend. Adam, like, showed me where to get my hair cut here. Like, you know, he was, like, one of the very early people that I knew here in L.A. And so I remember the first time we were doing a rehearsal, I remember this clear as day. It was a 10 a.m. rehearsal. Mm-hmm. And
those don't happen anymore. We put from the 1 o'clock now, but okay, yes,
true.
10 a.m. I remember that.
You know, it was probably at that time, like the, you know, what we could get at amp or something. Because I remember, and it was pretty short notice and stuff. And so I put off until the night before learning.
Oh my
the 15
god,
tunes or whatever. And I was teaching at this great little mom and pop music shop called Grayson's Toontown in Montrose that you probably know. And,
yep,
and so they have nice little rooms up there. And like as a teacher, I had, you know, my own set of keys and whatever else. So I finished up my last student at maybe 8 or 9. At night, and was like, all right, man, let's see what I'm getting into here. And just, you know, literally had blank paper and the, you know, probably a CD that you give me or something.
And you're
at
like,
that point.
Oh shit.
And it's like, oh man. And so sure enough, that was an all-nighter. I remember driving from there to amp the next morning, just weary as could be, but like, you know, also super stoked on the music. I mean, that was the other side of it. Is it's
but
like
you
okay,
played it like a badass too. Like, not everybody, like, there's always like a part of me when it's like when a musician comes to rehearsal, it's like, all right, they're probably not going to have their act together. I mean, people that I've known and respected forever,
sure,
come to rehearsal, mm-hmm, and like it's just like, dude, why would you work like this?
Sure,
like,
sure.
Take pride in your work.
Yeah.
You have always been that guy.
Oh, cool. So, well, it's different mentalities, even different cities. Like, yeah. I know friends from here who have gone to other cities, and it's like even the MO in other cities might be that everybody shows up without, like, knowing
the
stuff.
Work.
Like, they're all learning the stuff on the spot pretty much or whatever.
That
and it's
just
like,
drives me crazy.
Well, yeah, and I mean, all the more because of the complexity of your music. It's like, you know, that's one thing when it's, you know, a 3 or 4 chord pop tune that you can, you know, listen
you
to
win
a couple times through. And
which
then
you were probably hoping that's what the gig was.
I was more or less banking on that, I think, when I cracked it open. I'm like, oh, man, I'll be home by midnight and, you know, sleep 8 hours and head over to rehearsal. And no, not at all. And you know, what's so funny, it's like, you know, talking about the old days and doing the crazy night drive up to San Fran and back down. One other thing, and kind of circling back to Mozambique, that place.
I love that venue.
Yeah, yeah.
Still love that venue.
Yeah, and like, I remember that spot. I was coming from a gig up in Fresno to do that, and like, talk about foolish things that you would never repeat if you had your wits about you. I remember I had to learn some more of your tunes for that, so I was doing them in between sets while I was up there, and then I was taping them on my dashboard as I'm making the drive from Fresno.
You see what I put my musician suit?
Right? And it's like, dude, you know, like it's
that's
one
impressive
of those things. Yeah, well, it's amazing any of us live through this is what it really boils down to, I think, you know.
But the fact that you still have the charts, mm-hmm, I'm excited to call you for more gigs now. But you've been doing, let's talk, okay, first of all, mm-hmm, you know, one of my favorite parts about doing this show is like, mm-hmm, I get people that I'm fans of as musicians or artists, and I get to ask them the questions, mm-hmm, that I never took the time to ask in full detail, what got you into music? What was the moment? Where did you grow up? What was the first piece of inspiration that kind of changed your world when it came to music?
Cool. So grew up Milwaukee. Well, born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, right? Home of Summerfest,
that's
as
right.
you well know, right?
That's right.
So born in Milwaukee, took piano for, you know, several years as a kid there and stuff. When we were nine, moved down to Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is basically what I still consider home. And
how old were you when you moved to Tulsa?
I was nine when we moved down there.
Okay, yeah. He just said that. Eddie just gave me the look. Eddie just gave me the look like, dude, he just said that.
It's all right. You could have flipped it now. Well, how much longer
did
you live in Oklahoma?
I was thinking, because he said Summerfest, and I was like, I was thinking, I didn't know he was from Milwaukee, and then he was
You were daydreaming about you playing in Summerfest.
No.
Yeah, you're like, oh, remember that time at Summerfest?
No, he said he was from Milwaukee, and then I was like, I don't remember being from Milwaukee. And then he said Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I'm like, he doesn't have an accent. And that's when I asked the question. So you were nine.
Yep.
Tulsa, Oklahoma.
I was nine. Tulsa, Oklahoma. At 12 years old, got like super into Poison, which was the flavor of the day. Went to a Poison
Flesh
concert.
And Blood, was that the record that did
it? No, this is Open Up and Say Ah.
Oh,
and controversial album
that's,
cover.
Yeah,
right? I mean, got pulled most places, the Walmart.
12 years
stuff
old,
like
too. That's like...
12 years old, yeah.
Daredevil years,
yeah,
man.
I know. I somehow managed to convince my mom to take me to that concert and, you know, was already from, like, the music videos and stuff totally into it. And, like, you know, my brother and I both, like, were, you know, doing whatever we could and, like, saved up half the money for a guitar. And the parents put up, you know, the other $50 or whatever to get a guitar out of the JCPenney catalog. So it was that kind of thing
awesome.
And stuff. And, yeah, and then, you know, into guitar lessons and stuff like that from there. So, yeah, and then... kind of from there, just, you know, bounced around, got into all different music as I was a teenager, went out first to college in Ohio and then in Boston and stuff like that.
Where'd you go in Ohio?
So I went to Oberlin.
Okay, yeah. Yep. And that's a conservatory, right?
A conservatory, yeah. So did the jazz thing there. Fantastic experience, but like total middle of nowhere. Like, you know, it's always fun. As soon as I actually describe where it is to people, it's like, man, you're, you know,
in the sticks.
Yeah, 45 minutes southwest of Cleveland. So it's like, you know, not a whole lot going on out there.
So you practiced a lot.
I practiced a lot, man. It was, yeah. That's pretty much what was going on. I mean, you know,
crazy.
great, like, people and great, you know, time.
Who did
just
you study with
other
there?
People. So I studied with a guy named Bob Ferraza, who's still, I believe he's actually the head of the
Sounds
department.
Sounds like Fonzarelli, but it's not.
Not Fonzarelli, but great jazz guitar player and, you know, a guy who I learned a ton from and, you know, still have all the notes from that as well and stuff like that. And
that's
that was amazing. And then had a year off, went out to Boston, did a master's degree at New England Conservatory with Gene Bertoncini and John Abercrombie, which is great. Yeah, amazing, right?
These are heavy hitters. So. Heavy hitters. And that whole music scene in Boston is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one. New England Conservatory is one of the best schools in the country. Yep. I didn't know you went there.
Went there. Yeah,
did you go like half, or did you do your grad school?
No, so I did a master's at New England Conservatory. So I did the undergrad at Oberlin and then went out there for the master's.
Damn,
so
ambitious.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. Hard work, fun. Lived in Boston for a while after that. Like, kind of got more and more into the songwriter thing there. And then basically a friend of mine, Rich Price, got a record deal with...
Wait, his name is Rich Price?
Rich Price.
You know there's a joke there. Come on, Eddie. You're a comedian. There's a set. Yeah. You're like, no.
There's nothing there.
It'll be there before the end of the show.
Just move on.
But no, so he got a record deal on Geffen, and they you know, did the thing and threw seven of us in a van and trailer out on the road there for several months and, you know, just kind of trotted around, you know, mostly doing opening slots for people and stuff like that.
Like who?
You know, had a blast. So I'm trying to think. I think the very first run that we were on was we spent some time with Toots and the Maytals. Which
oh,
was
my God. One of my favorite bands.
Yeah, awesome. And that was right around the time that the record that they won the Grammy for came out.
Right.
And everything. So, you know, odd thing, Carl Harvey, the guitar player, like popped up in my email today, like a LinkedIn invite.
Dude.
Or something from that. I know,
dude,
so funny.
And Toots is like one of the like artists that made me want to do music. He's such, and he's, I just saw him at Coachella recently.
Yep.
It's like, dude, he's still killing it.
Yeah, for sure. So my awesomely funny Toots story, though, was that in the time that we were out with them, I actually only interacted with Toots at all once. And I remember this was at the State Theater in Portland, Maine, like February or something like that. So, of course, it's cold. And it was just this dark alley leading out from the back of the theater to where they had, like, the buses and stuff like that and our van parked. And so we're cruising along in there, and basically we're leaving, and, you know, through the darkness comes, you know, Toots and these other couple guys, and basically
like a gang fight.
Yeah, totally. Toots just sees us and he goes, That was like the extent of our interaction.
You're like, yes!
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Exactly. Toots acknowledges. Yeah. Yeah. But no, I mean, great guys. Like, you know, everybody there was super sweet, like the whole time and everything. So
that's insane, dude.
So yeah, for sure.
And I'm sure he had like crazy amounts of energy back then because he still has it now. He still like jogs like on stage and like he's crazy. It's nuts.
Yeah.
Who else did you play with during that time?
So during that time, I remember we did about a month of time opening for Joe Firstman, who was of course like doing a lot of stuff, out in here. And I'm trying to remember which show that was that he became.
Carson Daly. It was with Carson Daly, and he also was signed to like William Morris and had like a whole thing. He's the big songwriter.
For sure. And became great friends with some of those guys too. You probably know Darwin Johnson and those
guys. I don't
know
Darwin. Do you know Will Artipe?
I don't know Will Artipe.
Trumpet player on the TV show. But
oh, okay. Yeah.
And some of the guys are probably, we probably know a mixed bag of some of the people.
Yeah, for sure. So that, and then, so those were the two main ones that I remember. And then I remember there were other like, you know, odd gigs here and there with like, I think a Sister Hazel thing, and then like some other things. But you know, I'm sure I'm leaving plenty out at this point. Now that was 2000.
Now it's all blur.
So. Yeah, it's all a blur. So that was fun, and that was actually kind of the thing that ultimately catapulted me to LA, because it was like after wandering.
Easy there,
you know, yeah, right.
That's some WD-40.
After wandering on the road for several months, it was like, well, man, I left everything in good stead in Boston and could go back there, but it's also like, you know, at the time I'm like 28 and it's like, okay, I really had nothing tying me down, and a couple of my friends had already moved out this way, and so it was like, man, that's, you know, if I'm ever going to make a leap, this is probably the time to do that, you know.
Well, in Boston too, it's like, it's a surprisingly small city for how big of a major city it is in the country, you know? So it's kind of like once you play all the clubs, I've heard a lot of musicians from Boston say the same thing. Like, once you play the circuit, once you know all the people, then it's like, okay, it's time for greener and bigger pastures.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny. I kind of feel like that works a couple different ways. Like, that's certainly one side of it, and that's how I felt, you know, that you hear a lot. And then there are other guys, like, you know, there's a guy, Kevin Barry, who, you know, plays, like, you see him playing lap steel with, like, Ray LaMontagne and stuff like that sometimes. And he's a Boston guy, and another guitar player named Duke Levine, who I've always looked up to a lot. And I remember talking to Duke about this one time, and I'm like, man, why didn't you ever, like, move to New York or L.A. or something like that? And his response to me was basically that he just liked the music there better. And it's like, man, you know, I certainly understand and appreciate that with some cats, that it's like, man, if you have something that you're doing that you really are passionate about, like if you've got your scene there and you're, you know, you're the guy in that scene and you know, really able to kind of do the things that you want, then fantastic, wherever that happens to be. And, you know, and that's one of the cool things. It's like, even Tulsa now, like my brother still lives back there and I have other friends back there. And it's like, man, that's become a great live music scene.
Yep.
So it's like, you know, when I left there, it's like I felt like there was, you know, very little going on.
And there's a jazz scene in Tulsa that nobody really knows.
All kinds of stuff.
There.
Yeah. I drove by the Echo the other night and I saw like Reed Mathis and Electric Beethoven up on the bulletin board. And Reed was in the first band I was ever in when we were like both 13 or whatever.
That's crazy.
And it's like, yeah. And, you know, I think he's up in the Bay Area now, but it's like, yeah, a lot of cool stuff came out of there, and like a lot of cool stuff is like continuing to go on there now. Like I heard it got rated like the third or fourth best local music scene in the United States.
That's awesome.
So yeah, amazing. But also just, you know, a clear indicator of like how much things change, that it's like, you know.
And how did you feel like LA was in comparison?
Well, so
I'm from here, but it's always neat to hear like what people's perspectives are with this scene.
Yeah, LA to me was just like the land of possibilities. You know, it's and
you hear that, Eddie? Land of possibilities.
Land of possibilities.
Believe it. He's like, bullshit. Yeah, right. He's from Virginia. So he's like, I came here with dreams. Yeah, he was a lot peppier.
Well, 20 years ago.
Yeah. No, but it's, you know, it's one of those crazy things where it's like really, and I mean, I know you've experienced this as well, where it's like you can kind of see, okay, something that you wouldn't think is that big a deal and that quite frankly in any other city, you know, would just be a gig.
Yeah.
You know, can kind of morph into something. And usually, you know, the thing that there's the phrase that you hear people say all the time, well, it's who you know. And it's like, I've never really felt
believe
that way.
That,
believe that. It's more like, no, it's who you develop friendships with and you know, who you're really close with. And so, you know, like kind of an example of how things trace is like, okay, the very first gig I really did as an LA resident was at Tangier back when that was still
open. Oh, my God, I loved that club.
Yeah, right? Yeah. With a woman named Bird York, who 2 years later got nominated for the Oscar.
I remember this for Crash.
Yeah.
That's right.
Exactly.
And you told me the craziest story. We won't talk about that, but you told me. We'll talk about that off
the air. Okay.
Nut story.
But, yeah, so like the funny thing was the drummer on that very first gig at Tangier was Tim Curl, who, funny enough, it's like I'll still do gigs with Tim from time to time and stuff like that. But like he also got me into a circle with a bunch of other people, you know, my good friends Craig McIntyre, Eric Holden, those guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a result of that, it's like, okay, I get in with, you know, a great singer-songwriter from Singapore who I worked with a bunch. And then as a result of that, I, you know, get connected when a Chinese pop tour was coming through here.
Yeah, I remember you telling me. You were like doing a lot. I was like, what are you doing now? You're like, I'm doing this Chinese pop. I'm like, how? You're a white dude.
Yeah, right? I know.
He's like, oh, you don't know my Asian roots?
The funny thing is I had to sing in Chinese a little bit on that tour, which was crazy.
Wait, why can't we make that the next song?
There we go. That's all you get.
Okay. Oh, that was so good.
Yeah, right.
Made my nipples hard.
Just kidding. I'm not going to check and find out if that's true.
Eddie wants to. He's just checking.
No, I'm
good. There you go. But yeah, so that's one of those things. It's just like, man, you know, it's like really one of those things where any single thing that you get can ultimately morph into some other crazy stuff.
I'm smiling because you are an exceptionally talented dude, and I was picturing you singing with a smiling face like it's the most epic music you've ever worked on, because you have a cheery disposition about everything, like that a lot of musicians, like if they were in those situations, they'd be like, damn, I don't know if I want to sing this, but I'm sure you were just like rocking it like it meant everything in the world, because that's the way you approach everything. So I'm just like, I just had that little moment as you gave us that little snippet.
Dude. Well, and you know, the other side of it is, it's like, you know, you just grow to love the challenge. I mean, that's part of what keeps it interesting. So whether it's learning new tunes, whether it's learning, you know, okay, you know, I'm going to learn, you know, phonetically how to sing through this thing in Chinese, you know, and probably, you know, doing it with a horrible accent and just hoping that your vocals
tap in enough. Did like, you sing it with the other Chinese artists in the room, like on stage?
Oh, yeah.
So what was that rehearsal like? You got to tell me, like, when you first were like, I'm going for this, what was that moment like? Because I got to know about
that. Okay, so the amazing thing was, this was a situation where basically I was called to come in mid-tour and replace somebody. It was the same music director that I had done the show with a different Chinese pop artist here at the Shrine in LA when they came through. Basically, they needed somebody to fill in for that. And so now this is a different artist touring over in China. And so I get the call, and, it, you know, again, talking about short timelines, it was like, I remember I got the call on a Sunday, and the next Saturday I was on a plane to Nanjing, right?
Dude.
Show is 3 hours long.
Oh, my
so
God.
Learning a three-hour show, basically, to go.
How many songs did you have to sing in Chinese?
Well, thankfully, not that many.
Okay,
yeah. No, it was just a little bit of stuff, you know, kind of because other folks in the band had most of the other stuff covered, and it was kind of like a stripped-down presentation a little bit anyway.
But that's, like, dude, that's that takes some guts. Like, yeah, I'm ready. I'm your guy, dude. I'm there.
Yeah, and you know, totally, like, never been to that part of the world before and anything.
Right.
You know, I mean, so many crazy jokes. It's like, you know, just yeah, I don't know. But, you know, I remember rehearsing at this, the locker room at a racquetball court, because they had, like, this 5,000-seat, like, racquetball.
That's where all dreams start.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the racquetball courts in Nanjing, you know. And yeah, so you know, we're just rehearsing there, and it's, you know. I don't know. I feel like that stuff all came together pretty quick, in part because it had to. It was like, you know, you've got 2 days or something to put together this, you know, this 3-hour show, and, you know, that's kind of all you get, you know, in that situation where you're jumping in and just, you know, replacing somebody. So
nuts.
Yeah.
Yep. You've been all over the world. Mm-hmm. You've been producing artists. You've been working with songwriters. Let's get to a performance real quick.
Okay.
Who did you bring with you to your left?
So I brought my good friend Katrina Wolverton.
All right, Katrina, say hello.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for including me, Andrew.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's get to a performance. What are you going to play for us first?
So I think we're going to do Katrina's song, Hold Me Down.
All right.
And actually, maybe
can you do it in Mandarin, though?
Maybe Andrew can.
I'll sing in Mandarin while she's singing in English, and we'll all leave confused. How's that?
Perfect.
But, yeah, maybe while I grab the guitar, if you want to tell them a bit about the song and about the, you know, really quick about the record and everything.
So the song is the single off of my EP, Better Now, and when I got the call to go out on tour, we were supposed to open for Leon Russell.
Oh,
and
my
then
God.
He sadly passed.
Oh, my God.
And then we got to open for John McLaughlin, and that was really cool.
Wow.
And so we incorporated a Leon Russell cover. But I think one of the coolest things that I really wanted to talk about with Andrew is I think people sometimes underestimate what kind of skill and creativity it takes to break down a song from this whole produced pop version into something that's going to work acoustically.
Yeah. Yeah.
People are like, oh, how are you going to do that? And I go, oh, I have a secret weapon, the guitar hero named Andrew Doolittle.
That's right.
And he just knows how to nail it. Like all those amazing things you were
awesome.
Saying.
He's awesome. I mean, I know he's in the room and he shouldn't hear all this praise, but seriously, he is a mastermind when it comes to music. And it's like, his attention to detail is what makes him succeed the way he does. So, all right, let's hear this. So Hold Me Down.
Hold Me Down.
This is off your record, Katrina, right?
Yeah, and we're going to be performing in a bunch of L.A. area shows, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Go for it. Yeah, sure. Do it.
So basically, there are a few coming up, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, but basically tomorrow out at the Canyon Club, and these are all
perfect
opening
timing.
For,
see that?
Yeah, these are all opening for John Popper from Blues Traveler.
Awesome.
Right? So Canyon Club tomorrow night, then we're up in Nevada City, kind of up by Sacramento at a place called Miner's Foundry, right? And then Friday night we'll be down at Coach House in San Juan Capistrano.
Wow.
Sunday we are at St. Rock in
correct.
Hermosa Beach.
Yeah.
And then,
great club. I love that club.
Yeah,
I've
totally.
Played there many times.
And then on the 14th, we're at BLK Live in Scottsdale. So those are the ones coming
awesome.
Up. Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
Nice little West Coast tour.
And I'm
right?
super grateful for this guy, Andrew.
Awesome.
You're so awesome.
Thank you.
And I'm really, really excited to go back out on the road with you because we just have so much fun on stage.
Yep.
This guy nailed it every time, like you said.
He's awesome. And it's like, you know, the great part is the true test of a musician. This is the true, this is mm-hmm. in 15 years of being a touring musician. I've learned when a musician doesn't know what's happening, but they make it sound like they've been playing it for 20 years. And there's so many musicians that can't do that.
Sure.
And the ones that I love working with the most are the ones that make you feel like, yo, dude, I don't know what's happening here in this next section, but I'm going to play it like I've been playing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds, it becomes something that you didn't expect that it would. And that's what that's where magic is, you know, like mm-hmm. when it's unexpected and it's awesome. And that's rare because most musicians kind of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't bullshit.
Sure.
He makes it count.
Well,
right?
that and the ability to, like, you know, fend off an unruly fan with a telecaster. I think that's the other thing, right? Keith Richards style.
That's
right.
Down, down, do down, down, oh. Down, down, do down, down, oh. I love the way you do it, 'cause your love is all around. I love the way you do it, 'cause you always hold me down. I know it, every moment. Your love will get me through it, 'cause you always hold me down, down, do down, down, oh. No one else can hold me like you do.
Down, down, do down, down, oh.
Hold me down and love me like you do. It's crazy how you read me, you say what's on my mind. Baby, I love you till I die. I know it, every moment. Your love will get me through it, 'cause you always hold me down, 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 down. No one else can hold me like you do.
Down, 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 down.
Hold me down and love me like you do.
Down, 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 oh.
Down, 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 down,
oh.
Hold me down and love me like you do. Greatest
I love the way you do it, 'cause you always hold me down. I know it,
I know it,
every moment,
every moment.
Your love will get me through it, 'cause you always hold me down, 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 down.
Sounds like a little bit like Heart too, but it's got great songwriting, great arrangement too. Seriously,
nice.
Badass. You were looking at me at, like, towards the end. I was like, "Oh my god, am I supposed to come in?"
I was like, "You could if you want."
You gave me this look like I was supposed to make an entrance, and I was like, "I'm not gonna do a thing because I don't know what's happening right now."
I was gonna say the answer to that question is yes.
Yeah,
I wanted to sing the little Mandarin line that he had.
There you go.
You know, Eddie, I should get you singing in Mandarin.
No,
I think so.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, maybe I should have you, like, maybe put some lyrics.
There's no music in this body,
man. I'm sure I still got all that stuff written out phonetically somewhere.
Did
you know what the words were?
I did, actually. Well, two things factored in. First of all, my wife is actually Cantonese heritage, basically.
Was it Chinese propaganda?
Was not Chinese
propaganda.
Like
for the communist state, you weren't like...
No.
All right. So
the one crazy thing I'll say about that is part of the show was we did another Brick in the Wall Part 2. As part of the show, because it was about the artist's influence, right? Well, yeah, and so the crazy thing about that was they actually had like 50 Chinese school kids up on the stage for that, so they're all sitting there, you know, heads going side to side like this, going, you know, we don't need no education.
What?
Yeah. So it was like, wow, okay, this is pretty heavy. Like, you know.
That's dope.
I know. And that's, I'm sure, as close as I will ever get to feeling like I'm in Pink Floyd right there.
Well, like, and also, like, causing a revolution in China. I mean, that's... Well, there's still those two things.
There we go. So, yeah.
That's nuts. So,
crazy. Yep.
Andrew, you started producing quite a bit, right?
I did. Well, yeah, not a ton. I'm kind of making some of my first forays into that.
Is that because you just didn't want to go on the road as much?
Well,
or you just got way into the studio thing and the writing thing?
Yeah, it's kind of a bit of both. Like, you know, for me, the writing thing has kind of come a little bit later, but it's also been one of those things that's been percolating in the background for a long time.
Right.
Like, the guy who I'm working with, who actually I just put on a plane back to France this morning, basically, he and I have actually been writing together. Like, I actually met him here in 2005 and played guitar on two songs on his first record.
Wow.
Basically went over there to work with them, you know, several times. I think about a dozen times all told, like, that I went back and forth over to France to work with them. And then...
in Paris or
in Nice? In Paris, yeah. And basically starting around, like, about 2011... he and I started, you know, actually doing some writing together and things like that. And so it's like, this is one of those projects. It's like, okay, you know, five songs that have been percolating since 2011. And finally got to the point, you know, a couple months ago where it's like, man, we just got to do this and, you know, push it over the finish line. And so it's like, that's kind
of... I respect you for seeing it through. A lot of people just sometimes don't. You know, it's like, oh, man, if this is not going to happen after that much time.
Sure.
It's easy to give up. It's so easy for creators to just be like,
You know. Well, and you know, part of the challenge, I think, is, as you know, anybody kind of creative knows, is that it's easy for things to kind of fall on the back burner when there's other stuff going on.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there'd be months at a time where we wouldn't touch it. But I feel like, you know, every time I came back to that stuff, I had every bit as much passion about it.
Right.
And so it's like I kind of couldn't imagine not seeing it through.
And you also have all this insight from being on the road, playing with all these people, different styles, being in different cities, different music scenes. Mm-hmm. So you have all that stuff to pull from, which is awesome.
Yeah.
You did some work with Rita. Let's talk a little bit about that. How did you get involved with that? And
So basically, the way that came about was through my friend Paul Bushnell, who bass player and basically put that band together. And so that was, you know, fantastic experience.
And Rita is Tom Hanks' wife.
Yep.
We're allowed to say that. You see that, Eddie?
My wife.
I'm just saying.
I don't understand what you're saying.
I just wanted to let you know it's not just an ordinary girl named
Rita. It's not
Rita.
Just a Rita.
It's an extraordinary.
It's the Rita.
It's the lovely the Rita. Rita. Actually, it's not the Beatles Rita. It's another Rita. It's Tom Hanks Rita.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, she's a really talented songwriter. She's been doing a lot of country, western kind of influence, Americana stuff.
For a bit, yeah. I mean, she had a record come out last March, and great variety of kind of pop and country tunes on there, and did a couple weeks on the road last summer with Chicago. You know, have been doing shows. Actually, before I forget, I should also mention that there's a show coming up at Hotel Cafe on the 15th of this month. And so, yeah, just great tunes, great passion.
Yeah, and she's solid. Like, I've heard some of her tunes, and it's like it's got it draws from experience. It's very good storytelling. Mm-hmm. It's good arrangements, really lush, like just good music. You know, it's like sometimes that's rare. There's a lot of country music that I think gets a lot of noise and doesn't have that. Mm-hmm. And then when you hear somebody that's kind of doing that Americana country thing, and then it actually has substance, it's beautiful. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Let's play something that you brought in for a studio track.
Yeah, so maybe we'll do, since we were just talking about this a minute ago, I brought in a tune called Awake, which you guys are hearing like basically the demo that's like pre what we did this week on it. So
love.
He was just here to do
debut.
His final vocals. Like, this will be, you know, the first time it's ever been played anywhere. So this is one of the songs that, you know, he and I have been working
premiere. On. See that world premiere, Eddie?
Premiere exactly. Of Awake.
You should have combed your hair for this.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was bitching. I was bitching. Very cool music.
Thanks, man.
But I don't expect anything but the best of you, man.
Appreciate that.
You know? So, Andrew, where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you, to have you play on their records, produce,
sure.
whatever?
Hit me up, Andrew at andrewdoolittle.com. That's two O's in Doolittle. So just like Dr. Doolittle with two O's is the secret there. So
that should be your name, dude. Dr. Doolittle. You're like, no, it's taken.
No, I can't do that. No, nobody's ever mistaken me for Eddie Murphy.
That's and you got and you got a bunch of gigs. One more time, just like run them
bunch
down.
Bunch of gigs. The Quick Rundown, Canyon Club tomorrow, Minor Foundry in Nevada City on Thursday, the Coach House on Friday, Sunday at St. Rock in Hermosa, June 14th.
What time? Just to kind of...
Oh, I don't have that here, but I'm sure if you hit the websites there, you can find that. And then BLK Live in Scottsdale is June 14th, and then with Rita Wilson at Hotel Cafe on the 15th.
Dude, you're a busy man. Dude, I love seeing that, man. I love, like, you're a hustler, man, so... Dude, we want to have you back.
I would love to.
One more time, you got a website too, lovely lady.
I do, and there's you can find some pictures of Andrew up too on my socials.
See that? Bonus.
Nobody needs to see pictures of me.
Right? But it's katrinawolverton.com, two O's in Wolverton. And my socials, my Twitter's at Katrina Music. I tweeted at you earlier.
Oh,
and
you did?
Instagram's at Katrina Music.
Sweet.
And I try and have Andrew with me at all my gigs if he's free, so... If you come to see me, chances are...
Do you know what time you're playing at the Canyon Club tomorrow?
Canyon Club is 7:15.
Okay.
And Hermosa Beach is 7:30.
I'm going to try to squeeze that in.
Come squeeze
tomorrow.
It in.
Tomorrow.
Come squeeze us in.
Yeah. I mean, I'm serious.
Hey.
He's like, yeah, right. Now I'm going to be like, what's up, dude? I'm here. So, awesome. Thank you guys so much for being guests. Andrew.
Thanks for having us, man.
Dude,
you're
such a badass.
You too.
I mean, what a badass, right? Eddie.
No.
You know, what? I miss you, buddy.
Well, I
want to talk more Wonder Woman with you. We're going to talk more Wonder Woman.
We'll talk Wonder Woman later.
All right.
You guys had a good flow going. I didn't run up your flow.
You know, I haven't seen him in so long. It's just
you guys had a good flow. You didn't want me to do.
Well, and I got to interject too, man, that I'm just like pleased as punch to see everything that's happened for you over the years.
Man.
It's like, to see.
I'm glad you used pleased as punch. In forever.
Tulsa boy.
That has been forever since I've heard it.
Well, Andrew, Katrina, Eddie. I love you guys. This is just good.
Okay, it's getting weird now.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.